fueled by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Kerry Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
That's us. Hi, Kerry.
Hello, Mr. O'Neill.
Good to be here again. Good to see you. Been a big week.
Yeah, and I walked in and said, well, you're looking dapper today.
Well, there you go. Yes, I put on my election wardrobe today.
Is that what this
That's
is,
right.
Right.
You're
just getting in the mood.
Yes, we are. We are. This is the official kind of election garb, election special. Sort of our election special tonight, and I'll give you more about that. We'll talk more about our jam-packed full lineup in a few minutes. But been a busy week. Lots of stuff happening. What's been on your mind lately?
Well, trying to get warm. I want the weather.
Yeah.
We now have the sun shining, Terry. It's just if there could be a little
yes.
heat involved.
That's right.
Really appreciative. But, you know, has a funny way of reminding me every morning of Terry's rants on global warming.
That's right, yeah.
Can't we please, can't you be wrong this one time? Let it warm up,
well,
Terry.
Well, see, there you go. There you go.
This is God in heaven.
That's right.
Showing people how right you always are. Is that what all this is about?
It may well be. Well, I was wrong, though, about the Provincial New Democratic Party.
You were?
Yes, here in British Columbia. I predicted some time ago that Mike Farnworth would win the election. For the leadership, and he ended up just losing out by 3 or 4% of the vote. So, and the new leader is a guy named Adrian Dix, who's the probably from all reports the hardest core left winger of the bunch.
I was a bit shocked, quite honestly. I mean, if the NDP haven't figured out that this is not how you're going to get elected, more power to the Conservatives.
Okay, though. Yeah, or the BC Liberals. But here is my fear, actually.
And
I'm not actually afraid of it, but this is a prediction that I hope doesn't come true.
But wait, you were wrong on Mike Farnsworth.
That's right. So. But just barely.
Just barely. Oh, okay.
That's right.
So we should be worried.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, you know, like it's political prognostication. Who knows down the road? this has to do with the backbone of Christy Clark. Okay? Mm. I think if Kevin Falcon had won the BC Liberal leadership, and of course he was further to the right, he was a solid conservative, he has a lot of backbone. He and Adrian Dix would not bend much. They would be going at each other hammer and tong, as they say, and staking out their ideological territory.
But I'm with you so far.
With you so far. But right now you've got a centrist leader of the BC Liberal Party and a left-wing leader of the NDP. And this, we've already seen in one of her first acts, Premier Christy Clark decided without any consultation to the most affected industry, which is restaurant and hospitalities, to arbitrarily lift the freeze on the minimum wage, which was a big issue for organized labor, okay? And so it was widely applauded, but it still wasn't. It was sort of a, okay, we'll get this thing out of the way. Well, I'm starting to think now, if Adrian Dix, a strong and capable politician, hews a very straightforward left-wing line, are we going to see more concessions from the eager to please Christy Clark, saying, well, you know, I guess we can give them that because they'll attack us on that. And we can give them that because they're going to attack us on that. And so we're starting from a position of center and left. And is she going to move even more to the left in order to try to meet that hard left person kind of halfway or to take away some of his issues? I don't think you would have seen it with Kevin Falcon, but there's a stronger possibility you're going to see it with Christy Clark.
Well, you know what? Seeing Christy Clark on the news the night that the decision came down out of the Supreme Court of British Columbia concerning class size and collective bargaining with the BC Teachers Federation.
Okay, yes.
And there was Miss Nicey again conceding to the court, even though she admitted she hadn't already read the decision, but she was just giving over, we didn't do things right. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is not leadership material. This is not doing what's right in the interest of this province and our public money.
Yeah,
this is
good
just
point.
Bending over backwards, kissing ass to the judges, you know, and to labor.
Yeah.
Labor again.
Well, sure, the BC teacher. She's got to make nice, got to make nice. So is she going to make so much nice that the central centrist conservative BC Liberal coalition moves further, moves left now. And so there's a lot of peril in that for the BC Liberal Party. Of course, there's opportunity for the BC Conservative Party, BC First Party, the BC Heritage Party, and all those other smaller parties.
Well, you know, I'm sure I heard those champagne corks a-poppin' when the news came out that Adrian Dix had been elected. And this was, I mean, this is reminiscent of days when the NDP was obliterated, being left with, what, two seats?
You know what? I happen to think that so one of the reasons I predicted Farnworth was because I thought Farnworth would be easier pickings. He's such a nice guy and a gentleman and all this.
He had appeal.
That he had appeal, but I thought that he would be sort of easier for the BC Liberals to take. Dix is going to be a hard cookie to make crumble. Anyway, there's
my
thought.
I don't think he has public appeal, Terry. I think they've lost probably their ability to at least get the attention of people because he is so rigid. Yeah. That's not going to work, I don't think, in this next election.
Well, we'll see.
We will see.
That's down the road. We're going to have a BC provincial by-election with Christy Clark in about a month from now, and that's going to happen rather quickly. And then that's going to be followed soon after by a mail-in referendum on the future of the HST. So that's big things happening in the province of British Columbia. But of course, the bigger political story of the day is the federal election campaign. And you know, we've seen the federal election debates. The leaders had their debates. We've seen all the commercials, the road signs. Maybe your door's being knocked on. Maybe you've been given a flyer by a candidate at a bus stop or something like that. Has any of that happened to you, by the way? Have you received any phone calls from people? Phone calls.
Wanting to know how we're going to
vote. How are you
going to
vote,
Our vote can be counted on. Nobody knocking at my door, but then I have anti-political dogs.
And you've got quite a long driveway, too, don't you?
Yeah, there's a deterrent factor.
That's right, So I've got a short, steep driveway, but I do get...
Not knocked upon
phone calls though, and emails. Emails are plenty. But you know, we've been hearing a lot about the Federal Conservative Party and Stephen Harper, the Federal Liberal Party, the Liberal Party of Canada, and its leader, Michael Ignatieff, and of course Jack Layton, the resurgent Jack Layton, who, by the way, if in case you missed it, yesterday's Angus Reid poll had him tied at 25% with Ignatieff.
You know what? I got to say it. I like Jack.
Well, yeah, I think he did.
I really like Jack.
Personally,
I don't know if I could vote for Jack, but, you know, I would like to sit down because I think I could bring him over to our side.
I don't know about that.
I have my ways, Terry, on you. But I do think...
I think Olivia Chow might have a word to say about that.
Oh, not those ways.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I can be reasonable.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Yes, I'm keeping a notebook on all the times it's happened here. So anyway, we've been seeing all of this brouhaha in the federal election about these three parties. And, of course, we've got the fourth party, which is a Bloc Québécois in Quebec. And but... You know, there's actually, you know, a dozen and a half parties that are fielding candidates. Mm. And some of them are quite interesting. Some of them we've never heard of before. Some of them are old stalwarts. Some of them are rather narrow-issued. And so today, on Roadkill Radio, we decided to invite some of them, representatives of some of the parties, along to our show tonight to give them a showcase, give them a platform.
Give them a drive-by.
That's right, a drive-by speech. So we'll be talking later in the show with Doug Christie, the leader of the Western Bloc Party. It's a Western Separatist Party.
He's been pounding away on
that's
the pavement
right.
for a number of years.
We'll be talking before that to Jim Nachuk, who's the leader of the Christian Heritage Party. Of all the parties we have on, represents tonight's probably the biggest and...
If Ron Gray was here, he would tell us the fifth largest party in Canada.
Yes. We'll be talking in just less than a half an hour to Paul Geddes. He's on the board of directors, and he's a Libertarian Party of Canada candidate here in the Lower Mainland. Paul has probably run in more elections than just about anybody in Canada, federally, provincially, and municipally as well.
Well, we'll get that number from him tonight. Now
I'm
curious.
I wonder if he even knows how many elections he's running.
Okay, Paul, if you're listening,
he's a mathematics teacher. He's a mathematics teacher, so
hopefully he keeps
track. But first, we are going to be talking, reaching all the way back east to Ontario, to Liz White. She is the leader of the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada. Liz White, are you there?
I am.
Hi, thank you for joining us tonight, and we're joined as well by my co-host, Carrie Simpson.
Hi, Liz.
Do you hear us?
A bit.
Okay, you're breaking up a tiny bit here. We're just trying to get you zoned in here. Good. So, the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada, I'll tell you what the first thing was that I thought of when I heard about the existence of your party, and that was the country of Bolivia. Recently passed legislation giving extended rights to birds, bees, and trees, locking this into legislation, a very broad sort of thing. Is this a sort of, I presume you've heard about what Bolivia has done. Is this the sort of thing that your party, the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada, stands for as well?
Well, I think there's a recognition, very progressive thing. Bolivia, I think, that the environment is pivotal to our survival.
Excuse me just a minute, Liz. Yes. I think you're going to have to talk quite a bit louder.
Okay.
I don't know. We're having a little trouble hearing you here. I hope it's just our little speaker and not the whole show, but try to speak as loud as you can. So,
is that better?
Okay, yes, it is.
Okay.
So project as much as you can.
Okay, so I think... What was demonstrated in Bolivia is very forward-thinking people who recognize that the environment is crucial to our survival and to us living the kinds of lives that we would like to live, and that the environment is not just one of a number of issues that we ought to be dealing with, but in fact, it is the issue that has to be dealt with and from which everything else flows. And so I think that's the progressive thought in Bolivia, that's what that signifies, and yes, that's where we want to go.
Okay, well, I know that there's definitely been some concern raised about what Bolivia has done, and presumably, therefore, about what the Animal Alliance Environment Party stands for as well. And that is that one of the very basic things about rights, giving rights to a person, is that that person should have responsibilities as well. Certainly when you give rights to animals... or to an inanimate part of the environment, there's no responsibility there. It's sort of an open-ended thing, and it also leads to the idea that there's a failure to discriminate, failure to sort of assign a proper place in a hierarchy of values. Traditionally, we've had humans first, living in conjunction with the environment, but also... You know, stewarding the environment, being responsible for it. It seems that what Bolivia has done, and perhaps what you're talking about, is that we're all kind of equal in this together. Humans, birds, mammals, lichen, I don't know.
Well, I think that's absolutely true, that we are one dependent on the other. We are, you know, nature is interconnected, and we are not different from nature. We are part of it. And I think we... face the problems that we face in Canada with regard to the environment and particularly with regard to animals because we consider ourselves first as though we have all the rights to do what we want and what we need. And the difficulty with that is that it means that we diminish other beings and that we displace them. And that ultimately, taking that to the nth degree, is that we, whatever we decide to do is a right for us to do. We have that right because we have that power.
Okay, well, let's stop.
That herein lies the problem.
Yeah, well, let's stop there. I mean, certainly we've seen an extreme example of what animal rights activists would say, that given that sort of philosophy, if there's a young boy drowning in a pool and a dog drowning, that there's no difference in who you're going to save. Don't you as a human being have a natural empathy and a natural understanding that the human being is more valuable than the dog?
Well, I think that comes naturally to us to feel that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, but is that, do you agree with that feeling?
But what I would try and do is save both. And I don't think I would be precluded from doing one from the other. And I, and frankly, you know, that kind of argument it's a difficult argument because it doesn't really get at what the issue is. The issue at this point in time, I think, looking at our environmental history, is that we're in deep trouble in terms of the environment. And it's because we put ourselves first without including ourselves within the natural ecosystems that exist out there. And unless we start to do that, and unless we see the environment as being the place from which we gather our own health and ability to live in a good and peaceful way, we're not going to survive.
Yeah,
because the environment is going to impose its will.
Yeah, the environment doesn't actually have a will. There's natural processes
exactly.
that take place, and without a doubt, you know, we have a responsibility. I would say to steward the environment, to look after it, to not spoil our own water and not pollute the air, and to respect life. Really, all aspects of life. You know. Whether you come from a theological point of view that God created life and therefore life is good, or whether you just come from a practical point of view that the diversity of life tends to be a healthy thing, and as far as we know, it's a unique thing in the universe, that's a good thing. But at the same time, I have to say that I'm worried about an issue that sort of like, where do humans fit into this? You're saying that humans have to essentially take on the mantle of being entirely natural beings, as if we don't have any sort of other abilities or responsibilities or even right to sort of lord over the environment. And I would say that we do, actually. I would say that we're not natural beings. Somehow we've left the natural realm.
I think we do, because we have the power. We can, in fact, other beings and the environment, and we do, and that's what the problem is. I don't think we are stewards of the environment. I think we get in, take whatever we can as fast as possible, make the biggest buck possible, and get out. That's the way it's driven, and so we have serious, serious environmental problems that are simply not being addressed. And it isn't just the tar sands. If you look at the United Nations report on the effects of animal agriculture on global warming and greenhouse gases, animal agriculture impacts that greater than all the cars on the planet. And yet nobody is talking about the stewardship of the land with regard to agriculture.
Okay, well,
we have to begin, what I'm saying as a party, we need to be able to put these issues forward and talk about them in a way that begins to change how we relate to the natural world.
Let me ask you this question, because I was unaware of your party, and as I read through the issues, I was very interested, Liz. Our audience knows that I'm an avid organic farmer, and I have very little use for pesticides and all kinds of things as a beekeeper and all the rest of it. So you got my attention on some of these things. But one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, are you a vegetarian?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm not. I'm a very happy carnivore. And on my organic
omnivore.
Farm...
Omnivore.
Omnivore.
That's right. You eat vegetables and meat.
Oh, do I? Are there vegetables in there?
Yeah, I think you do. I've seen you eat a salad.
Okay. All right. I'll admit to that, too. But I don't want to hurt the lettuce. But Liz, what I mean, the mono farming industry, which is one of the things that I think that, you know, is an industry that needs to have a lot of attention put to it, and the humane treatment of our feedlot animals, those kinds of things. But I happily, you know, produce beef, chicken, and turkey, all organic on my farm. It's not a mono. It's for the family and close friends. But... you know, is this something that you would be opposed to, or something that you would support as a better way of doing farming?
Well, I think that certainly is very much a better way of doing farming. And I think what the United Nations report is focusing on is intensive animal agriculture. But But at the end of the day, we have to look at the impact that animal agriculture has on the environment, including organic, because all of us who occupy a space on the planet take from it. And so we have to figure out what is the way that we can make the lightest footprint on the planet. That's all I'm saying. However you do it is what we advocate. I congratulate you for being an organic farmer. I think that's absolutely fantastic. I congratulate you for giving it to local people. That's really fantastic. I buy locally. We go to the local farmers market. We buy all vegetarian stuff. So we try and walk the walk and talk the talk and do what we espouse to do, and I applaud you for doing that. But we don't talk in this election about animal agriculture.
Okay, Liz White, that leads to a very practical question here about why we don't do that. You've got the three main parties, and you've also got the Bloc Québécois, and you've also got the Green Party of Canada, arguably the number five party, or maybe six, depending on the Christian Heritage Party. The Green Party would seem to be a natural home to someone with your concerns. Do you consider the Green Party as being too soft on these issues?
No, I think the Green Party actually has a very, very good platform on animal issues and their interconnectedness to the environment. The problem is that several problems. First of all, they don't talk about animal issues very much. So, you know, it's like I say, most environmentalists deal with the real estate, but they don't deal with the occupants. And the occupants are as much a part of the environment as is the real estate. So, the second thing is that not only do they not talk about it, but they are broadening their platform to appeal to a broader group of people. So all of a sudden, the environment, which is shoved to the side in many elections, or certainly not the preeminent topic in most cases, is not talked about even in that intensive sense with the Green Party, even though they're an environmental party. They're trying to broaden out their appeal. That's okay. That's fine. Except that because the environment is not discussed, because the environment is ignored by politicians, somebody has to stand up and start pushing this stuff and making it the one topic that we talk about. It's not that we're a single-based party, as though the environment was a single issue. The environment permeates every single issue we deal with in this country.
Well, that specifically, it certainly permeates the economy, because people's interest in the environment seems to go up and down with the down and ups of the economy. When the economy is booming along well and everybody's happy with things and they got good jobs and good income, then they turn their attention to the environment. But in a time like this, when there's higher unemployment, rising government debt, reduced incomes, take-home incomes, that people's put their own economic interests ahead of the environment, and I would say that's entirely natural.
Well, it may be entirely natural, and certainly, you know, I don't want to point fingers at anybody in particular, but the fact is that we have an economy that is not sustainable. The economy is based on consumption of goods, which has to be acquired by using up resources on the planet, and ultimately the planet isn't going to have sufficient resources to produce for everybody to purchase. So we have to begin to looking at models like steady state economies, different ways of calculating wealth and involvement that are not the typical ways, because the planet just can't sustain it.
These sort of thoughts dealing with the sustainability and what the planet can sustain, are you one of the from the environmental camp that believes that there should be many billions of fewer humans on the Earth?
Well, I mean, the human beings are here. We're here. I mean, we have to deal with the reality of the situation. And so the appeal is to people, and it's a difficult appeal. I absolutely acknowledge this. Is that you have to go beyond your own interests, that we live in communities of people, And we have to make sure that within the communities of people and within the communities of animals and the environment, that everybody is cared for, everybody has access and equity, and that includes other species other than human beings. And I think if we do it collectively in that way, that we'll have quite a different world to live in.
Liz, I have two points that I'd like your comments on, because I look at the desire to just make government regulate everything, and I think that there is a growing revolution afoot that Canadians don't want any more regulation. You know, government's too big. We're just regulated to death. Then, and for every regulation, it costs me another $100 in tax money. Is there not a better way here as far as educating the people to make a movement of choice? We talked about the economy. We talked about consumerism. We talked about self-interest. Isn't there, you know, when movies like Food Inc. came out, you know, that got people's attention on how food was being developed and delivered to our grocery stores. And I think it made a lot of people aware that maybe a different food choice or how we get our food or what kind of food we're going to eat suddenly became part of the consciousness of the nation, or at least those that were watching that movie. Is there not a bigger role for public education here and individual choice? I mean, my interest in having my organic farm and having my meat on my table that I know what it's been fed and what's in there, no steroids, no medication, no junk, no shit. You know, that's a lot of work, but it's my self-interest for the health of my family and myself that I do it. I'm very selfish on that front. Is there not a bigger and better role for public education and consumer choice? Consumer choice will drive this market. If suddenly feedlot meats become taboo, poison, you know, you don't want to eat it, people have another choice where they can get that product from. Isn't that going to send a louder, clearer message without more government involvement in our lives?
Well, I would just point you to some statistics. After Food Inc. came out, there was not a drop in the number of animals consumed in Canada. Okay? So I'm not so sure that broad education in that regard actually changes people's behavior. There has been a massive amount of education telling people what kinds of cosmetics are tested on animals and what are not, and yet there are still a massive numbers of cosmetics out there that are purchased by everybody who don't really either are interested or know about it. So I'm not so sure that the broad education is the issue.
So your solution would be government regulation, then a political power?
I think
power.
There has to be some government regulation. Yes, I do. I don't believe we have an environment that's in trouble. We have gas prices on the rise. And I can tell you right now that people who are purchasing cars are not buying smaller cars, even though we've been through this before, even though there's been a recession as a result of it. It has not changed people's behavior in terms of driving. People are not out of their cars. So I would say, yes, there needs to be some consumer choice. Yes, we need to give people all the tools possible to make different decisions. But at the end of the day, there has to be some regulation or some tax that changes people's behavior, because that's how it happens.
Liz White, Liz, we have to bring the interview to a close, but before we do that, I just want to run down a few things to help our listeners and viewers make up their mind. First off, how many candidates will be running for the Animal Alliance Environment Party in the coming election on May 2nd?
We have seven.
You have seven. And are they all in Ontario?
No, there's one in the Northwest Territories.
Okay.
How do you like that?
There's a big breakthrough for you.
Well done.
That's right. And how long has your party been in existence?
We were formally registered in the January 2006 election.
Okay. And how many members do you have?
Members? Oh, probably 3,000 or 4,000.
Okay.
Across the country.
And what's your website so people can find out more information about
www.environmentvoters.org.
Environment Voters. They left out the animals.
The animals come in the other end.
Okay. Yes. Liz White, thank you for joining us, and I know it's a busy time for you. You're not only running a campaign, but you're out
protecting cormorants from Peter Kantar, Environment Minister.
Well, there's a cormorant kill, I understand, that you're monitoring.
Yep.
A cull, that's right. Too many cormorants and not enough Animal Alliance Party members, I guess.
There you go.
Okay. Liz White, thank you very much.
The vote.
Okay. Good luck.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Liz.
Bye-bye now. Thanks.
So long. Good night. And that was Liz White, the leader of the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada. Sounds like a very nice woman.
Well, and you know what, Terry, I have you to thank because I had never heard of this movement. And you know what, I do like raising at least people's thought process.
Absolutely.
On this.
You know,
they're doing a good job.
That's
here.
Right. That's right. Well, there's some get to think, but listen, you know, at the base, you have to look at a person's philosophy, a party's philosophy as well, and what they consider to be important. What they consider not to be important. And to me, it was very telling that you talk about when I asked her, do you save the little boy or do you save the drowning dog? Mm-hmm. She'll try to say both. And she has a hard time saying, yeah, the little boy is more important. And to me, I can't accept that. And I would never vote for a party that believes in something like that.
Well, yeah, but kudos to her for being forthcoming.
Absolutely.
And that's refreshing.
That's right. Throughout the course of the evening, please send us emails. We're already getting emails from some of our listeners. Jane Avis sent us an email a few minutes ago asking about the plans to depopulate the Earth. That email came at exactly the same time as I was asking the question, so we're of like mind there. And she's sending more emails. Of course, you can send an email to us at roadkillradio@live.ca. And we've got to move right along here to our next party representative. We're not the Liberals, not the Conservatives, not the NDP, not the Green Party. We wouldn't let the Green Party on, Carrie.
We made a decision on that one.
And,
but we did invite Elizabeth May. If she wants to take us to court, then we would be reasonable about that.
So we move from the Animal Alliance Environment Party, where there's a certain set of values, to the Libertarian Party of Canada, where there's a distinctly different set of values in play. And joining us tonight is a longtime candidate at many different levels of the Libertarian Party. He's on the board of directors of the party, and he's also a candidate here in the Lower Mainland, British Columbia, Mr. Paul Geddes. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Terry. How are you?
Good. How are you? And we're joined by Kerry Simpson tonight as well.
Hello, Paul.
Paul, before we go any further, I was just chatting about this at the beginning of the show with Kerry. I was saying you might be the person in Canada who's run in more elections than anyone else. Do you have how many elections, municipally, federally, and provincially, have you run in?
One municipal.
Uh huh.
Four federal.
Uh huh.
Maybe that's my fifth federal.
Okay.
And I think three provincial. Oh,
okay.
Provincial.
So I thought it was a few more than that, but that's still
respectable.
That's respectable. You're almost in double figures then. So, you know, it's probably a few people run a few times more than that.
Yeah, I had to take a step out when my daughters were still in school. I didn't want to embarrass them too much.
That's right. So, nicely timed, the Libertarian Party of Canada is actually having a convention here in Vancouver.
That's right.
And next week.
Sign up. You can go to our website, www.libertarian.ca.
That's right. Only one W, eh?
No, the three of them.
Okay.
And sign up, because this is an amazing convention. We've got the top three libertarians in Canada coming here.
And they would be?
Walter Block from... He was formerly the chief economist at the Fraser Institute. Now he's teaching in New Orleans. But he still has a house here in North Vancouver.
Yes.
And he's up for our convention.
Yeah.
We have Jan Narveson, who, amazingly for a libertarian, has won an Order of Canada. He teaches philosophy, and he's going to be a highlight speaker.
Okay.
And then Pierre Lemieux, who has a fantastic website. I think the National Post called it the best political website in Canada a couple years ago.
Uh-huh. And what makes so we have this convention coming up, and libertarians know how to organize themselves and have a convention right in the middle of a federal election campaign. Good stuff.
We planned this long before the election.
Yes.
Somebody made a mistake in Ottawa. We have this convention the day before the election, and the other big event that's coming up is they called the election on the day that taxes are due.
Ah.
Now, this could be the first time that Canadians are going to sit there. The next couple of weeks, I hope they're swearing through their tax forms as they organize their finances and they understand the cost of our government.
Well,
There's a good, very good starting off point for what libertarians believe, because if I'm correct, just about every tax day, the first day of May or the last day of April, whenever it is, that we can see you and some of your friends picketing in front of a Revenue Canada office somewhere.
Yeah, it's a day of mourning for Canada. We like to stand outside the Canadian Revenue Agency and just try to remind Canadians that we're crazy, that we put up with this system. Why do we put ourselves through this weird way of paying for services that we want? If you wanted food, you don't go down to the grocery store and register your income to decide what kind of food you're going to eat. Why do we pay for government services this way? It's just a crazy, messed up, masochistic system.
So you would say that if there are government services, and I presume you're also going to say that most of the services done by government should be done by private businesses, but what government services there are should be a pay-as-you-go, a fee-for-service sort of thing?
They should be voluntarily funded. I'm sure that people who want a type of a service can organize themselves in a voluntary way to get those services. This idea of taxes is kind of a fairy godmother belief that somehow things become less expensive if I force my neighbors to pay, and then somehow I get to escape because they're paying more. And it just doesn't work.
Well, of course, the big defense of taxes from all the major parties, but especially from the Liberals and the NDP, but of course the Conservatives have bought into this as well, is that we need the taxes to sort of level the playing field in Canada. And of course, in any of the great welfare states of the Western democracies where there are all these social programs designed to redistribute incomes so that the gap between the rich and the poor is lessened. And this not only is sort of a very charitable thing to do, but it also has the effect of preventing people from rising up in revolution every 20 or 30 years and demanding an overthrow of the ruling class.
Really? This idea of redistribution being ethical come from. Redistribution is pure envy. People out there have different talents. We never talk about redistributing beauty or IQ. They just pick on money. Not everybody earns money the same way. Some people want to work harder. Some people devote more of their life to their income. And if you earn more, you should be able to keep it. This is yours. It's your life, your choices. And I just don't think it's right to take honestly earned income from other people to give to others.
And I just want to go back to some of the questions that I put to our first guest, and that was about using government and regulation and tax, because, of course, every time we increase regulations, we need new bureaucracies to support the staff that needs to get the regulations enforced and make all of us bad Canadians behave ourselves, or at least try. I'm sensing as I speak to Canadians, Paul, that there's a growing revolution happening. People are taxed to the max, and they're not going to take it anymore. Do you sense that in some of the discussions that you're having as you travel around?
I sure hope so. I can't tell for sure, but you're right that politics follows. It's not going to be the lead. And what's required here is a societal change. We've got to start letting other people, letting our neighbors live their own lives, making their own choices and paying their own consequences for their choices. And hopefully let's take a small example here. I did raise two daughters when they were very, very young. If they wanted to touch a hot stove, I would stop them. But at some point, I don't know, 12, 13, if they really want to touch that hot stove, as a parent, I don't want them to burn themselves. I can warn them all they want. But at some point, I have to let them make their own choices in life. And our government, which watches over us and regulates us and prevents us from making bad choices, weakens us. It makes Canadians irresponsible and makes Canadians not think about the consequences. And that's what I hope is growing out there in Canada. It's not going to happen just in Canada. It's going to happen all over the world.
Certainly, as governments go broke, and we've seen major problems in the European Union, and we're seeing ominous, thundering, earthquake-like noises coming out of the United States because of their perilous financial situation as well. These sorts of questions will continue to arise and get stronger. But
hope so.
but at the same time, is there not, certainly with the identity of being in a nation state, some sort of sense of security? And people want to know that their back is covered. People want to have some, not being out there and fighting tooth and claw every day for every little thing. And somehow I think that the idea of a welfare state plays to the security. And even the very rich people enjoy that sense of security because they know that other people are being looked after, and they don't have to kind of feel guilty about that or be bothered by some sort of sense of disparity.
I don't know. I hope that the nation state withers away.
Okay, that's my next question was going to...
Because my family lives in three continents right now. My brother's in Asia, my daughter's in Europe. Thanks to telecommunications, we can talk to each other cheaply very often. We can get to know each other's lives, what's going on. And I see the government just getting in the way.
Okay,
little pieces of paper that I have to show some bureaucrat to get on an airplane to travel to visit my daughter. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
But again, that's all security related, is it not? I mean, when you get right down to it, we're talking about a sense of security here, are we not? And that I think the vision that you have sort of calls for a more precipitous way of life. And people don't want
that. I just see the border as some stupid government regulation that gets in my way of my choices in my life. Just south of us, about an hour, they've got cheap milk and cheap cheese and cheap gasoline. And takes so much time to get across that border that sometimes it doesn't make sense to make those purchases. And I want that border to wither away. Let me buy from the person that can produce the best for me. Let me trade voluntarily with anybody in the world who can best deal with me. I'm sorry, I just think Ottawa and Victoria, Vancouver, they just get in my way.
Okay, let me ask you this, Paul. You've indicated you had two children. Did they go to public education?
One did, yes.
Okay, so who's going to pay for that then? And I'm going to make it, our audience knows I am not a fan of the public education system. I think that parents should have the choice in education, and if we're going to fund education, then give the parents that money and let them decide where their kids are going to go.
I think that... Well, the goal would be that people pay for their own education. It's like anything else. If it's free, if you think it's free, if you think someone else is paying, then you don't get to choose what they give you. And all kinds of consequences of not being able to deal with a teacher who you actually pay the salary to, they're not going to give you exactly what you want. And plus, we don't get much choice.
Okay, well, let's go to something even more...
Okay. So on that, though, the poor family that whose father suddenly loses a job or loses all the money or is and can't pay for the school, they're deprived. Their children are deprived of an education under your system then?
So your claim is that somehow government is a better tool for charity than people are by themselves.
No, I see, okay. Okay.
If someone doesn't have any money and they want to buy something, they kind of have to ask someone else for help.
Yes.
I'm not opposed to all kinds of competing services or companies coming up and saying, these are the types of people that I'm going to help. I do not think that I'm getting good service from my government charity welfare system. They don't seem to be able to help the people that I think should get helped. And it's very expensive. Even with all the taxes I pay, I still see people sleeping on the streets downtown all the time.
Mm-hmm.
How come I'm paying so much and getting so little of the type of service that I thought I was going
to
get?
Because we have to employ all those bureaucrats to make sure we're paying our taxes.
And I think that if we had competing charities involved in this, they would fight with each other, they would compete with each other to give better service than the others. We'd get more people off the streets and helped than what we get right now.
Oh, you know what, Paul? I mean, you're singing part of my song, because I think we have gotten so far away. As a mother government so busy making us dysfunctional society, and then she wants us to pay for all her bad children. You know, it just,
it
goes on and on and on.
That's very libertarian of you.
Well, I have my moments. But what about roads, Paul? What about roads and bridges and transportation issues?
Well, you've got to read Walter Block's fantastic book. Go to walterblock.com.
Yes.
It's a very,
I can
very
even
thick
answer
book
that one, Kerry.
Well, yeah, but I want our listeners to know. Come on.
So, www.walterblock.com. Go there and look at this fantastic book about all of the evil consequences of the government running our roads and how they could be privatized and how much better service we'd get. I think we've been rescued a little bit by technology here. There's very cheap ways now to meter road usage. We see a little bit of this in that Golden Years Bridge, where you can get a little transponder for your car. And I can see that change is happening slowly, but in the future, roads, bridges can be private. A private company can build them, and they can earn the money from their users. And I look forward to the day when we have roads that are designed not to keep policemen in cars trying to keep speed down, but to be run by private security in a way that gets the most travel across their roads to earn the most revenue for their companies. We have sensible road service.
Paul Geddes, our first guest tonight was Liz White of the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada, a party with a much shorter track record than the Libertarian Party of Canada. But we did ask her about some of her essential, sort of almost essential beliefs about the place of humanity in this world. And it would seem to me that, and she, by the way, had a very difficult time. She could not differentiate between a drowning boy and a drowning dog. Which is, you know, it's the classic question you use to find out how radical an environmentalist or an animal rights person is. Something that I know the Libertarian Party of Canada supports is the idea that that the environment is not something that we are here to, definitely not something we're here to serve, that humans are here to serve, and is not something that has an equal kind of intrinsic value as humanity and as human life. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I step back a second, though, first?
Sure.
Libertarianism is not a whole philosophy of life. It's not about goals in life. It's not about what's going to make you happy. It's a very narrow philosophy, only about how we're going to deal with each other. And we believe that we should deal with each other on a voluntary basis, that the use of force or coercion should be limited only to defense and for righting previous wrongs when somebody did invade my person or my property. And that's it.
Yeah.
And then we just try to apply this over and over and logically to almost every situation you can think of.
Right, and the application definitely
runs
into some difficulties when we're dealing with two of the big issues of the last century, which is abortion and capital punishment. And I know there's even there's discussion within Libertarian Party ranks, especially about abortion. And
yeah, there's a huge debate about abortion because, it's in a way a conflict of two different rights. We don't believe in murder in any way, and yet we don't believe in being forced to help somebody against your will. So I'm going to quote Walter Block again here. I think a mother has a right to separate herself from the fetus and at least make that fetus available to whoever might want to adopt it, so that all the good do-gooders out there who want to stop abortions can put themselves forward as maybe offering a payment to the mother to keep the child, or else, again, I hope that someone is going to be investigating how to do this in the future, the technology would be, how can we transplant a fetus to another person who would be willing to step forward to take care of this thing? We do this already with animals. I'm sure it shouldn't, technologically, it should be possible with humans also.
All right.
And this is a way to solve the difference between, or at least make sure that the murder doesn't happen. But
very,
again,
very interesting point of view, and I know that many of our pro-life listeners will have something to say about that, and I hope they can send us an email if they've got issues with that. We're getting towards the end of our time here, Paul. I know that you must be excited not only about the Libertarian Party's convention coming up in Vancouver, and not only about the election where you'll have another chance to shine in the election results, but and not only about the tax deadline where you're going to have another chance to protest, but also about the looming release of a major Hollywood film, which
Atlas Shrugged,
the Libertarian the Bible or something.
I just received an online petition. I should have opened it. I didn't look at it too carefully about a place you can go to make sure that it comes to Vancouver. So.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyway, so how many candidates is the Libertarian Party of Canada running in this election?
We got 23 across Canada and 9 right here in the Lower Mainland.
How many?
This is our hot area for Canada.
The hot area, eh? Okay.
And I got to say something also.
Yes.
Mark Emery is in prison in the United States for engaging in a capitalist act with consenting adults. This is a crime. And Mark Emery is a libertarian hero, and we should at least pause sometime during this election to remember his fate and how horrible it was that someone's being put in jail just for selling marijuana. Actually, it wasn't even marijuana seeds, but just for selling something that somebody else wanted to buy.
There you go.
This is just criminal.
Well, it was criminal. It was deemed criminal.
No, it's criminal that he's locked up.
Well, technically, it's not criminal.
I hope they put judges in jail who did this to him.
Technically, it's not criminal. something criminal is in the criminal code or the American laws. Anyway, for people to find out more about your party, they go to the website, which is pretty straightforward, and that is?
Libertarian.ca.
Libertarian.ca. Paul Geddes, thank you very much for joining us tonight, and good luck on May the 2nd.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good night, Paul.
Good night.
And that was Paul Geddes, who actually lives pretty close to me in the suburb of Coquitlam, just down the hill and a few blocks along.
I'm going to make a prediction here, Terry. I think the libertarian movement,
okay, go ahead.
Well, no, look at the Wild Rose Alliance and all, the term libertarian has never been bantered around so much as it is now. I mean, think previously, 10 years ago, you didn't hear the term libertarian, except for the signs that maybe Paul had. But you know what? People are saying, and I'm not sure it's defined as Paul Geddes would have us believe. I view myself as a bit of a growing libertarian. And mostly it's because I'm rebelling against mother government imposing her will and having 100 bureaucrats every time I'm spoken to, on staff to make sure Carrie Simpson behaves herself or Terry O'Neill behaves himself. At what point this bureaucracy that keeps expanding, are we going to just say no? Now, does that make me libertarian? I'm not sure.
Well, there's actually, the libertarian movement has actually had a fair bit of success in the personal rights area. I shouldn't really paint it with such a broad brush, but it's been a very influential movement, just as the environmental movement has been very influential for different reasons. But it's had an impact, even if it hasn't elected anybody. It's got some very strong members who are very persuasive.
But Walter Block,
we've had him on the show here, and he's a force to be reckoned with for sure. So that's the Libertarian Party of Canada, quite different than the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada. So we're trying to present quite an interesting array of parties here. You are, of course, listening to Roadkill Radio, and we're just a short while away from the federal election here in Canada. If you'd like to send us an email, please do so at roadkillradio@live.ca.